It's just the normal noises in here.
This is Polyphonic Press, the podcast where two music fans pick a classic album completely at random. Using the patented random album generator, they are given an album to review from a curated list of over 1,000 classic releases, spanning multiple genres. And now onto the show. Here are your hosts, Jeremy Boyd and John Van Dyke.
Hey, welcome to Polyphonic Press. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
I'm John Van Dyke.
And let's not waste any time. We've got the patented random album generator right in front of us here. So let's hit the button and see what album we're going to be listening to this week. And the album we're going to be listening to is Earth, Wind, and Fire. That's the Way of the World.
Okay. Funky stuff.
All right. So here is a description of the album. It says, "That's the Way of the World is often considered Earth, Wind, and Fire's defining statement, blending soul, funk, jazz, and gospel into a sound that was both deeply spiritual and irresistibly danceable. Released at the height of the band's creative powers, the album embodies the vision of Maurice White, who sought to create music that was uplifting, universal, and transcendent. With its mix of lush horn arrangements, intricate rhythms, and soaring vocals, the record stands as both cultural a cultural touchstone of the 1970s and one of the most celebrated soul albums of all time. The album opens with its iconic title track, a slow-burning ballad filled with hope and wisdom, setting a tone of reflection and uplift that carries through the record. From there, the band moves into radiant, high-energy funk with tracks like Shining Star, a number one hit that brought them mainstream success. While songs like Reasons showcase the group's ability to balance groove and tenderness and emotional depth, each track contributes to a greater whole, with messages of unity, love, and perseverance woven seamlessly into the music. Beyond its commercial success, That's the Way of the World has endured because of its ability to inspire. It is as much a philosophical statement as it is an album, speaking to universal struggles and the joys while delivering them through some of the most polished and innovative arrangements of its era. More than just a collection of songs, it represents Earth, Wind, and Fire's belief in music as a healing, guiding force, and remains one of the greatest achievements in the history of R&B and soul. All right. Okay, so this was released on March the 3rd, 1975, and the genres are soul, funk, progressive soul, and pop. And it was released on Columbia Records, and there are 8 tracks on the album, and it's pretty evenly, side one and side two, 4 and 4. So what we like to do is take a pause about halfway through the album and discuss at the halfway point. So if you're listening along, which we do encourage you to do, the album starts with Shining Star and side one ends with All About Love. So if you want to pause after that song to hear the discussion, and we've linked the album to both Spotify and Apple Music so you can get it on your preferred streaming service. But without further ado, okay, here is the first song on the album, Shining Star. Ending the or side one with All About Love. Yeah, this is this is a really great record so far. I'm really liking this.
Yeah, it's good music. It's part of me is still waiting to see if there's another like banger like Shining Star on it. But so far the stuff that's on it is still pretty good. It's you know, it's a little bit more commercial, but it's done really, really well. It's
yeah, I agree. And I did like some of the more jazz elements in Happy Feeling. They were jamming a little bit in some of the instrumental sections, and I did like that as well. But yeah, I agree. It is a little more pop than I was sort of expecting. But yeah, it is. It's not totally like cheesy bubblegum stuff either. They really sort of straddle that line really well of like being commercial, but not totally. Like making smart choices, I think, in their music, like making, you know, they're not like Parliament or something that's completely, or Funkadelic that's completely like off the wall, but they're not like, it's like a sophisticated kind of pop music.
Yeah. It's interesting you brought up Parliament and Funkadelic, because Parliament was sort of the pop side of Funkadelic. And Funkadelic was like the experimental side of Parliament. Yeah. So, but these guys kind of do both, but they don't have to split their identity necessarily like Parliament and Funkadelic did.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, yeah, I think they have a good pot. I think they're making music. It seems like they're making music. They're just making music that they would want to listen to. And it's funny. It's I think when I was reading a little bit about the album, and it was actually this album in particular was actually a movie soundtrack to the movie of the same name. That's The Way of the World. And so I think that's why those little that little instrumental sort of interlude after Happy Feeling and All About Love. I think that's just some
incidental music. Yeah, I was a little curious about those.
Yeah, I think that's just some incidental music from the film that they sort of added onto the album.
Okay. Because I was a little curious about that.
But yeah, in that speech in the middle of All About Love, I think that was sort of at least alluding to the film. I don't know for sure. I don't know much about the film, but I think that was sort of part of some of the story of the film.
Yeah, it could be. I've never seen the film, so I'm a little curious. Was it like a self-produced sort of little movie or something like that? Or was it, I don't think it was like a big feature film or anything like that, was it?
it was, but it didn't do well. It wasn't right. A hit movie, but it was like a Hollywood movie, but it wasn't really, it kind of didn't do well at the box office. And actually the album did much better commercially than the film. But it has Harvey Keitel in it, who's a pretty, I think he was famous at the time, or maybe coming up a little bit, but and Earth, Wind, and Fire do appear in the movie as, I think they're just called the band or the group.
And apparently this is their sixth album, so they've been already around for quite a while, but I think this is the first one that really got them somewhere.
Yeah. I think Shining Star is probably their first big hit. I think they've been sort of grinding it out, you know, for a few years before this. I think they managed to release, when was their first album?
Probably late 60s.
Yeah, 71 was their first album.
Oh, wow, okay.
They released two in 71, and then one every year after that. So, yeah, wow. This is their sixth album. And, the one, sometimes that happens, and, you know, you're around for a few years, and I think they garnered a loyal audience, but they never really quite, you know, hit the top 40 or anything like that.
Right.
And I think Shining Star was the song that really got them a lot of attention, radio attention, I think. And that sort of thing happened quite a bit in the 70s. I know Kiss sort of went through the similar trajectory. And that sort of doesn't seem to happen a lot these days. You know, artists don't really sort of get, you know, nurtured by their record companies. They just sort of, I don't know of a record company after, say, I don't know, 1985 that would hang on to a band or an artist who's six albums in and they still don't have a hit. And this was Columbia Records. It's not like they're not on a major label, you know.
But I wonder if Columbia Records was with them from the start, though.
That's a good question. No, they were on Warner Brothers before.
Okay. So Warner Brothers.
Which is another. Yeah.
It's true. And sometimes they would invent, you know, smaller labels to handle this sort of artistic achievement. But I think ultimately they're still trying to make a profit. And then if a band isn't, you know, putting out the hits, they're not getting a return. And I do understand that. But the artist in me also kind of resents that, because it's one of those things you can't really force.
Exactly.
If you want it to be good anyway.
Yeah. And well, and the other thing too, I just thought of this, is like the 70s was the most profitable that the record business ever was, before or since. That's like, the 70s is when all the money was made. That's why you had albums like Led Zeppelin's Physical Graffiti with the cutout album cover, and Rolling Stone's Sticky Fingers with the zipper on it, and stuff like that. Like little cool stuff like that, that the record company would put money into it because they had money to put into stuff like that. And so when a record company is making a lot of money, they don't necessarily mind if one of their artists isn't selling a whole lot of albums, because they have the Eagles selling, you know, 10 million albums every time they put one out.
Yeah, I guess it was just at the time period they could afford to have bands just touring with a loyal audience and not necessarily making money at the box office or at the record store. I guess it seemed to only last a decade or two, being, you know, the 60s, 70s, mostly the 70s.
Well, it's funny. Well, it's not funny. It's sad, but it is funny that I think what killed it was Ronald Reagan coming in and deregulating everything and making all the radio stations basically just corporate radio. And they had these monopolies come in, and ironically, it was more profitable when it was the Wild West than when it had more like of a corporate sort of feel to it.
It's because it's art. It's corporate art. It may make money, but it doesn't resonate with people the same way. And it just doesn't. And when you get that something that makes money and resonates with people, like say with a band like Pink Floyd or something like that, that's when you're really raking it in.
Yeah, because not only is it popular, it's also good, and it's not, you know, it's not been put through like focus groups and stuff like that to see what people like. They just put it out, and if, you know, like they'll just put out an album because that's what the artist wants to put out, and you know, not everything that's going to hit, but something is going to hit.
Yeah.
And that's, authenticity resonates more with people than it does. That's like the ironic thing is if you let artists be artists, you're going to make more money sooner or later, because authenticity resonates more with people than some manufactured, everything controlled down to the way they look, the photo shoot, everything. Like an authentic artist resonates more with people than you know, than that type of thing. Yeah, that's my rant for the day.
Yeah, no, I agree. It certainly resonates more with me. And I guess when you hear about some of these other groups coming about that are so manufactured, it's sometimes they're resonating with an audience that doesn't know any other way. And that's kind of sad because, you know, they don't have access to these bands or artists or anything like that, that, you know, have of their own vision. And they don't know what they're missing sometimes. And I find that also really sad. It's just, there's this downwards trajectory ever since the 1980s. You know, not everything in the 80s was terrible, but there was definitely a stark contrast where they started, that was the catalyst of them trying to manipulate every little note on something to maximize profits.
Exactly. And I think the fact that this is their sixth album, and it's the one that finally breaks through, because like you were saying, it's pop, but it doesn't feel fake. Like, it feels like they're being themselves. Yes, it's catchy and it's poppy and it's radio friendly, but it doesn't feel like you were saying, it doesn't feel forced. It feels like they are making the music that they want to make. They're making the kind of music that they want to listen to. And when you have a 3-minute song like Happy Feeling with two different jazz instrumental breaks, that is not a corporate decision. That is an artistic decision.
It's an artistic decision, and you would not hear that sort of thing nowadays, in a corporate setting. There's, you know, I don't want to like slag on and say the 70s was the only time you could get good music, because there is good music out there. It's just, again, not at the forefront, and a lot of people don't have access to it because they've never heard of it. It doesn't get nurtured the same way.
Yeah, very true. Very true. But I did manage to find a few interesting facts about the album. Like I said, it is tied to a film. The album was originally created as the soundtrack to a little-known 1970 film of the same name, in which Earth, Wind, and Fire appeared as a fictional band called The Group. While the film flopped, the album outshined it and became a classic. And I think... Earth, Wind, and Fire, that was not the only movie that they were in. I think they were in that Sergeant Pepper's movie with the Bee Gees and Peter Frampton.
Could be. Yeah, that movie, I never saw it.
I have. It was on, it played on TV once or a couple of times when I was a kid, and I've seen it. It's not good.
No. But there was a lot of people in that movie, it's from what I understand.
Oh, yeah. It had, I think Earth, Wind, and Fire. It had Alice Cooper. Aerosmith were in it. Actually, their cover of Come Together, it's from that soundtrack.
And that movie came out, what, 77 or something like that?
78.
78, okay.
Oh yeah, they were in it. You had Peter Frampton, the Bee Gees, Steve Martin, Aerosmith, Alice Cooper, Earth, Wind, and Fire, Billy Preston, George Burns. Yeah, it's a weird movie.
I've seen a few weird movies, but yeah, it sounds like the kind of movie that was made to cash in on some anniversary of Sergeant Pepper or something like that, even though it came out a year later than the anniversary would have.
The 10 year. Yeah. It was made by the guy that did Saturday Night Fever. So that's why the Bee Gees are in it. I think what happened with that was George Burns had to come in because the musicians were so bad at acting, they couldn't handle the dialogue. So they're the stars of the movie, but like, it's just, they don't have any lines. It's just George Burns narrating the thing and telling the audience what they're doing. It's so stupid. And, anyway, that's a bit of a tangent, but, this album, like I said, it was a breakthrough hit for Earth, Wind, and Fire. The single Shining Star became the band's first number one hit on the Billboard Hot 100 and the R&B charts, and its success catapulted Earth, Wind, and Fire into the mainstream recognition. They have Reasons. The song Reasons became one of the band's most beloved slow jams, which we'll get to in the second side of the album. And showcasing Philip Bailey's soaring falsetto. Interestingly, while it's often mistaken as a romantic love song, the lyrics actually speak of fleeting physical attraction.
Song is that?
Reasons.
Reasons, still, okay.
And the album earned Earth, Wind, and Fire their first Grammy Award when Shining Star won for Best R&B Vocal Performance by a Duo, Group, or Chorus in 1976. And it has an enduring legacy. The album has been repeatedly ranked among the greatest soul and funk albums of all time. Its themes of unity, spirituality, and resilience have kept it relevant for decades, influencing artists from Prince to Kendrick Lamar. Yeah, it's still influencing artists, you know, today. So
yeah.
Anyway, those are some interesting facts about the album, but I guess we'll get back into the second side of the album, and it starts with the song Yearnin' Learnin'. So here we go.
We'll now take a few seconds before we begin side two. Thank you. Here's side two.
Ending the album with See the Light. I really like this album. I think it's really well done. It is, like you said, it is poppy, but it's not, you know, too bubblegum or anything like that. It's just a really good feel-good album, you know?
Yeah, it's got that classic soul thing going for it. I thought it was pretty cool at the beginning of See the Light, where they did sort of a jazz fusion sort of thing. It sounded like something Weather Report would do or something.
Yeah, I noticed that. That was really cool. Yeah, and Africano, I thought that was sort of...
That was pretty good, too.
More funky, but yeah, there were some jazz elements in there as well. Yeah, you know, there's a reason these guys are so influential amongst R&B that would come later, and a lot of the producers look to this album in particular as a big inspiration. I can definitely see it. This is sort of the natural progression where like Sly and the Family Stone kind of invented this sort of soul kind of music. And, you know, Parliament and Funkadelic sort of picked up the torch, and these guys are sort of carrying on the tradition as well, and just sort of seeing the progression like 10 years later, or whatever it is. This just fits right in perfectly with that.
No, I definitely agree. It's a classic. It's got its elements of funk on it, but it's definitely... This one is more of a soul album, but it's definitely got elements of funk in it. And and yeah, they dabble in a lot of other, you know, things that were popular at the time, like jazz fusion and stuff like that. This is a pretty well crafted album.
Yeah, I agree. And they are pulling stuff from stuff that was popular at the time, but it doesn't feel dated, really. It feels,
It definitely sounds like the 70s.
Definitely, yes, it does. But there is still, I think a lot of, neo soul, I guess you would call it.
Oh, borrows from this. Absolutely. Yeah.
And so it doesn't feel, it definitely feels, sounds like the 70s, but it doesn't sound stuck in the 70s. Like it sounds like it, like if this were to be released today, I would think, oh, well, yeah, it's a new soul band that's doing it. Like it's not stuck in the 70s. It definitely sounds 70s, but doesn't sound stuck there. Like it has a timeless feel to it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think so. I think I hear where you're coming from.
So I guess that brings us to the question, what would be your three highlights on the album?
Well, Shining Star is definitely a highlight. I've always loved that song. It's just a really good song. And then I think I'm going to go, I really like their funkier stuff. So I think I'm going to go with Happy Feeling and Africano.
Those are my picks too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those are definitely my picks as well. I mean, I think those are there isn't a bad song on here, but I think those three songs, if someone were to say, like, what does Earth, Wind, and Fire sound like, or, you know, what should I listen to? And you show them those three songs, that would be a good representation of what the band is, or at least this era anyway.
This album. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So I guess that brings us to the question is, would you listen to this again?
Yeah, I'd probably listen to this again.
Yeah, I would too. I think it's one of those albums that you can put on, and it works for, like, you know, a party or just to put on, just to listen to. I mean, it's one of those sort of universal sort of things that, you know, has many, many, it's appropriate for many occasions.
Yeah. Yeah, appropriate for many occasions is a pretty well put summary of what this album's about. I mean, considering it started out as a soundtrack and then kind of went on beyond the movie and created a life of its own, it's just a really good album.
Yeah. Yeah, some of the incidental music that they sprinkled in there, sort of gives it away as a film soundtrack. But if you didn't know it was part of a film soundtrack, then you'd still enjoy it as an album. I mean, So I guess we'll end the episode there. Thank you so much for listening if you made it this far. We'd love to hear from you. If you want to check out polyphonicpress.com, you can get all the episodes that we've done so far there, but also you can go to the contact page and drop us a line. We would love to hear from you, and we might even read some of your comments on one of these episodes. And if this is your first time listening, be sure to give us a follow and leave a rating and review, because it helps new listeners find us. And I think that just about does it. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
And I'm John Van Dyke.
Take it easy.